Okay. I'm ready to start for real. If everyone's start ready to start for real.
I'm ready.
Okay. I'm going to call that good. Hello and welcome to episode 19, the final episode under the name Provisional Nerf News Network Podcast. The next episode, this will be the Foam News Collective Podcast. I'm KT. I'm here with my co-hosts, Vilemods, Grimms Nerfworks, Dolking627. Say what's up, y'all.
What's up,
y'all?
And today we have a very special guest, Brad, a.k.a. American Foam. It's great to have you on.
Hey, what's up, guys?
As always, this is the companion podcast to episode 19 of the Provisional Nerf News Network show itself. Probably best to watch the show first, but if you didn't, it's, you know, probably survive. We might spoil some things in this show because there's a lot of little bits and jokes and stuff in it. So, we will get to know Brad a little better in a minute, and then we're also going to talk about the state of Hammer Prime blasters in the hobby with new Hammershot kits and with the Outlaw. We're going to talk about Ezekiel Springmaker. And close out with our little joke question. We will, of course, play What's That Blaster, our game that we play in the middle of the show today. But before we do all that, real quick, we got to go over some stories that wound up not making the show. Sometimes things are submitted to us on the Discord or brought to our attention and wind up just not making the cut for one reason or another. But we want to make sure that they get mentioned to the podcast. So. Hopefully someone who wants to hear about it will in fact know about it. And the first one was the Mandalorian reprint blaster. So it's Rey's blaster, but it just has like a picture, like a photograph of the Mandalorian printed on the side. We covered it, but it's released. It's available now, I guess.
Huh. I could have sworn someone found actually it on Target shelves, or was that just the Transformers one?
No, the Transformers ones appeared on Target. There was a week, like two episodes ago.
Yeah,
where,
I don't think we covered it being released. It was just
we didn't.
It was one of those no one cared, fell through the cracks kind of thing.
I'm confident that this is the actual release.
Okay.
We haven't seen it on shelves.
We just got a post about the actual release just yesterday about it.
Yeah, there was the thing a couple episodes ago where a bunch of the print stuff, like the Transformers stuff and everything, all got released all at once. But this was not in that wave. So
gotcha.
So if you're looking for the Mandalorian blaster, if you're Star Wars collector, now's your time.
The better Mandalorian blaster.
I guess. Brad, did you have one? I forget.
Had the Amben phase pulse blaster.
Yeah, that one, right.
And I've never paid more for something that my just heart sank as soon as I got it in my hands than that particular thing. So I think this is the better Mandalorian blaster.
Yeah.
$20.
I enjoyed the Mandalorian blaster. I didn't get one, but I had friends who had one, and when I used theirs, it was plenty of fun, but the paint was pretty abhorrent, to be honest. So.
And speaking of paint, they're really going after the X-Shot Skins line here with these, you know, inks blasters, especially with this one. I mean, it looks cool, but it's kind of funny how they did it, like, right after X-Shot.
Yeah, I saw a sales trend, and it's like, honestly, I don't blame them for capitalizing on this. It works, and it works well.
Especially with licensed materials.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, where it's like, you can make an interesting product again without having to redesign the whole blaster. There's good sides and bad sides.
I'd also argue that it's not necessarily that, because Hasbro has done this before even X-Shot did it. It's just that they're recapitalizing on it now that it's like a market trend thing, because they did it previously back at, like, what was it, Comic-Con with the barricades that had really cool Transformers prints on them.
Right. Well, and there is better printing technology now.
Grimms, those are actually some form of hydro dip. You can tell because the dip actually will continue and kind of warp on the inside, I think.
Oh. Right.
Well, there is better technology now, at least. Like, you can even go back to when we did the first thing about, when I did the segment about skins in, like, episode, like, 12 or 13. The first example in the sort of modern Dart Zone X-Shot era was the the Jurassic World one, which there's big old gaps on the edge. Like the printing can't cover the curve at all on that. Like it's a big old flat side. And then, you know, the machines got a little bit better and X Shot started really going for it. And then Nerf was like, well, we can do that too. Anyway, next thing on the list that did not make the show, the Swin Alien Pistol. And this was literally just an example of something that's just too realistic for us to put on the show reasonably. We'll get dinged by YouTube at a certain point if we do too much stuff like that.
I don't even think I saw this.
So Dorian had posted it, or someone, and I remember Dorian had commented that the mechanism specifically, it wasn't the aesthetic he was talking about, how he was wanting a pistol that had a mechanism similar to that. And I also thought the mechanism was cool, but yeah, it's just, I immediately thought of the comment of Quick, which one's the real one? And it's just, it's too much. It's way too much to cover.
That's a gun.
For sure. Like, I would love to own one of these, but I don't think I could ever justify taking it anywhere. It looks cool, but dang.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really cool. Yes, it's really cool, but like, you have to have a very specific situation where you're able to actually use this, where it is a completely private field and everybody's using stuff like this. And
for sure.
I don't have that situation in my life. So, and then the Silly Butts Alchemist, and this is officially out. It's Silly Butts' new AEB, but we are holding off on doing a story on it actually appears.
The Alchemist is his pump action, not the AEB.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I'm pretty sure that was the pump action. I don't know. Silly Butts has 90 projects.
It is. It's the pump action.
Okay. Jolt is right. It's the pump action. I'm thinking about, what's the other one that I'm thinking? Is it Cynthia
Battle Mage?
No, that you're thinking Battle of Battle Mage. Mage, I think.
I can't
but
keep track anymore,
man. But he is
making
an AEB using some of the frame of Alchemist now, so that's probably why you got confused.
That makes sense. Okay. Regardless, we're waiting on this one until parts kits are actually available in stores, and then we will do a full story on it, which will probably just be next episode, but that is why we're holding off on that one. And we also found out a little bit too late about this, about Nuke-lanta. They, I guess I do multiple big games during the year. Like, they have another one in December. I guess it's like quarterly or three times a year, maybe. But we were informed of this most recent one, which starts, if you're listening to this show, it started yesterday.
It's taking place right now.
it's going on this moment.
Yeah. Get out there.
One of the things that's been challenging about this show is, you know, we try to be meticulous on our own part about going out and finding stories, but we do to some degree have to rely on our Discord and our community to bring stuff to us. And so it's not impossible for things to get skipped. And so events have been especially challenging, partly also because it's like, well, at like, what is the level, like, what is the criteria at which it makes sense on a show that is watched primarily in the US, but internationally, like, how big does an event have to be for it to make sense for us to talk about it? And like, is it worth talking about something just because it's like really unique or cool? You know, we're still sort of learning where the lines are and all those things, but Nuke-lanta is very cool, and it's an invitational. Generally, if it's like an invitational and they're encouraging people to travel there, we'll talk about it.
I would say as well, it's just a nice advantage we've had in general. I was surprised the amount of support we've had just for finding news stories since even before we launched our first episode. We've had people dumping new news stuff in the Discord since before.
Oh yeah,
that, which is
shout
really
out
nice
to everybody on the Discord. It's,
exactly,
it's amazing to have a community like that that's willing to jump in and contribute, and it helps us out a ton.
Events and releases, especially community releases, those are the two I think we've had the biggest problem. And that, you know, because if you're a creator, tell us. We would love to know what you're making.
Yeah, I talked about that last time, right?
Yeah,
where what was the thing that was like announced on
F-tech.
they were releasing all of these little videos on Instagram of the development, and then when it actually came out, did nothing.
Oh yeah, and we just talked about that before the show started too, with the stuff on marathons and stuff.
I just followed the person too,
but it was like we thought that this was a news story we missed.
And Sandshark Labs Foam Arm Fryer, and Maritime Foam was about to do a review on it, and it is 100% the kind of thing we would cover. It was officially released on the 30th of last month. And so we literally found out about it as we're setting up for podcast. The folks at home will know at this point whether or not we decided to do a segment for it.
True.
You know, we don't. Frick.
Okay. Moving on for now. It's time for us to get to chat with, pick the brain of our special guest today, Brad, a.k.a. American Foam. Great to have you on here to get to talk to a prolific and creator in the space. I've really been enjoying your live streams lately, casual Wednesday night live streams, playing some games, chatting Nerf. I think that that's a really, really fun idea. And I'm just glad to see more people doing it. I'm really glad to see you doing it. But to start off with, I'm sure everybody listening to our show knows who you are, but would you go ahead and tell the folks, you know, a little bit about yourself, how you got started in the hobby, how long you've been doing this? Just give people a little intro, a little elevator story.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, I want to say that I'm honored to be here and honored to be on your last episode of PNN anyway.
We have to be careful how we say last episode because people are going to be like, oh, it's over. No, we're done, guys.
We're breaking up like a band.
Brad killed us and we're done now. That's how poorly it went. No, I'm excited for the rebrand here soon. But again, thanks for having me on. But yeah, just getting
in. As a fellow Foam in the Name creator.
There's more of us these days. Yeah. You know?
That's a whole other topic.
Maritime Foam. You know, it'll start to blend together, which is good and bad. But that wasn't the question.
That wasn't the question.
So how did I get into it, I think, is what you asked, right?
Yeah. How did you get started?
Well, I was always big into thrifting, even before YouTube, even before Nerf, frankly, because those of you that are familiar with my channel know I do like a big monthly kind of like supersized thrift run. So I used to look for like Star Wars collectibles. Don't say the word Thrawn right now because I'll just talk for an hour about that in a very positive light. But so I'd pick up like Star Wars collectibles, electronic stuff to tinker with in the garage. And then one day, we found a Nerf modulus ECS-10 brand new in box at Goodwill for $8. And I said, this is a heck of a lot different than the Aerostorm that I had when I was a kid. Let's check it out. And ever since then, it has been just downhill, man.
I mean, downhill in terms of your bank account anyway.
Absolutely.
Downhill in terms of the space in the garage. That's what I'm dealing with right now.
What's that Peter Griffin TikTok background noise? It's the I've got $30,000 in credit card debt.
it gets kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
You recently managed to nail a deal for a signature version of the Firefly with Monkey Mods. And you picked like elite colors, which is sick. They look awesome. Are they like specialized shades? Like, what was the process like figuring that out with them?
Well, I think that, I guess people must watch my channel. But the Monkey Mods guys had reached out to me a little bit here and there. it's somewhat known, but they must have seen some of the Firefly stuff, that second generation Orange Firefly that was generally pretty, you know, well improved from the first one. But I always said that was kind of my favorite blaster because I'm a big time sucker for like a gimmick. And the Firefly is that, mm-hmm. but it's one that's mixed with performance. So they asked me
nice.
Just through a DMs and Instagram if I was interested in, you know, coming up with a collaboration for like a new colorway.
They just reached out. they just reached out to you. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was surprised. I'm like, this is actual Monkey Mods, right? This isn't like some weird spam account. Cause I do suffer from imposter syndrome terribly. And I'm like, who am I? But, it was pretty cool. I really did like the color scheme because they asked me, well, what would you like to see? And I'm like, well, what are my choices? They're like, what do you want? And I'm like, oh, we're playing that game. Okay, cool. Well, let me get back to you. So I like got back to them a week and I'm like, I really enjoy like the transparent blue of like the worker kits, like the worker stock or the vector kit. A lot of my stuff is blue, but they're like, oh yeah, we could probably find something similar to that. And it's that same exact transparent blue as the worker kits are.
That's all beautiful.
Yeah, so it's a nice icy blue, I think they're calling it.
See, and then the reason it tickled me quite a bit is it reminds me of the Sonic Ice Blasters quite a bit, almost.
Yeah, like the Centurions or the Retaliators and stuff that have
before
that ice.
Before I ever had a modded blaster, my primary for a while was a Sonic Ice Rampage, which is kind of hard to handle when you're left-handed, but I made it work.
Mm. I'll bet.
Yeah, for the style, it's worth it.
There's been quite a few people, there was a whole convo going on in our Discord of people saying like, well, I have every version of the Firefly so far, but I want this one too. Like, it just, like, it looks great. I want to support American Foam, because you also get a cut of the sales, which I think is great, and not only great, but a really good precedent, hopefully, for, because we've seen more of these sort of like creator, manufacturer collabs.
Qualcomm has had a couple.
And so I think that's really nice and the way it should be. But yeah, people have just been like, it's gorgeous. And like, I love this blaster and now there's another one. I really want to have it. How does it feel? You talked about imposter syndrome for a second there. I feel that. How does it feel to, have a company reach out to you like that for something that's sort of like, because it's, you know, we hear from, you know, companies want to send you products to review and stuff. And it's like, there's this exchange of thing. And this is just like, hey, like, you want something that's like about you?
Yeah, there's a big difference there. Because like when a lot of people start out in YouTube, depending on what their motivations are, they're just like, oh, I'll get free stuff if I make YouTube videos. I'm like, slow down. If that's your primary motivation, it's not going to go well.
Yeah, you'll burn out pretty damn quick.
And you'll only do gel blasters from like China.
Yeah.
Not good.
We are well past the days of worker sending these big influencer kits to people and like,
I don't even want to say how many emails I have turned down for the freaking gel balls.
Yeah. Yep.
Turning down all the gel blaster companies is like the best decision I ever made.
I accepted a singular one.
I accepted one and it never got here, and then I just started saying no to all the rest of them.
Yeah, I did a few of those. There was like that summer of like gel ball that I did, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, I feel it kind of icky. I did the Nerf ones just like last week, but like first party stuff, I'm more willing to give a try, I guess, but eh. But yeah, back to the question, there's a big difference between that and then even Hasbro saying, oh, would you like to try like the double punch or the gel blasters? I'm like, yeah, of course, sure. But it's a lot more meaningful, even though it won't get as many views or as many sales, to have a company say, would you like to collaborate on something, to have an input in a creative process? That's probably one of my more meaningful achievements.
Mm. I love that. And it's a cool product.
Oh, yeah.
Found it being really, really
pun intended.
Cool.
The Firefly looks like such a cool blaster. I've never actually seen or used one in person before, ever, I don't think. They're pretty neat.
I don't think I have either, actually.
Wild, did you have one?
I have a couple of them. Actually, I have. Yeah. I even have printed, like, upgrade parts. Because the one thing I found when I was putting mine together, it didn't index, you know, the way that they're made. Because obviously they're made by Colonel Wasp, that was originally, and Colonel Wasp is really good at cost cutting for them. But that also leads to weird little issues. And I didn't like the indexing between the shells, because usually with, like, say, a Nerf blaster, you open it up and it's got like indexing for the posts on each other and, you know, like parts that actually come on the top or the edges of the shell that make sure that everything lines up properly. And it doesn't really have it on the Fireflies. So what I did, I just personally just didn't like it. I was like, oh, this doesn't feel right to me. I made a bunch of 3D printed like inserts that actually go into like the grip and things like that on mine. Actually, I think I reached out to you about that, Brad, didn't I?
I can't exactly recall if you did. I'm sorry. I don't remember.
I don't remember if it might have been on one of them, but I think I might have reached out to you. I reached out to somebody. I'm pretty sure it was you, but I don't know. It's been a while now.
Send a message to Brad's agent.
And, yeah.
We'll get back actually, to you.
Yeah,
okay.
don't call us. Little, we'll call you.
I know the parts Vile is talking about, and honestly, in that transparent shell, that could look pretty hot. You print them in the
It really could. Say,
you got to print them in blue and orange now. That's just where it's got
to
be.
It's true, yeah. I had two of them, and I went with the yellow shells and pink barrels.
Nice.
Because I was originally going to get the Walcom one and then change the shell around or change, like, I like to color swap a lot of parts, and mm-hmm. Walcoms weren't available, but you could get the yellow one and then just buy the pink barrels separate. So I was like, oh, okay, we'll just do that. And so I got a couple. I actually, it's funny you're talking about monkey mods, because I had picked up some other barrels, and I felt so bad. They sent me three barrels, because every time during shipping, I don't know what they were doing, but the front of the barrel where, you know, you normally could put on a scar or whatever,
mm-hmm.
three times, or I think two out of the three times, it showed up and it looked like they had taken, like it had been run over by a truck or smashed.
Oh,
and
man.
I had to keep reaching out to them, like, oh, guys, I'm really
international
sorry,
shipping.
Yeah. Like, I'm not making it up. I swear,
I'm not making it up. No, I still have them, but they did take care of me, luckily, on all of that. I just felt bad on how many times I had to keep reaching out to them. But yeah, I like them. There's some. They're definitely gimmicky. They are the most gimmicky, but so satisfying, because I also have the mag kits as well.
Oh yeah.
So I have those. Great. I haven't put them on yet, but I'm really excited for when I finally get around to that.
That was one of my favorite things, because, like, I'll take it to a war and people look at it, they're like, "Oh, it's a Firefly." I'm like, "Yeah, it's a Firefly that'll do like 220 with a scar on the end." And with the mag kits, it's kind of dumb, because I've got several of the mags now, and I was recently at a game where we had like a bunch of inflatable paintball cover and a lot of people, you know, running like SBFs and a bunch of just, you know, cutting edge stuff. And it was just fantastic to just, you know, just pump action, just snipe people from behind cover. And they're like, it's like, what has he got? And I'm like, just a Firefly, dude. That's all I got.
Oh my God. Yeah. They could do quite a bit.
I
want to
get one of them.
They're surprising.
I
want
to get one of them someday. It's
just
been meaning
fun
to get one for a while. I have a project that I kind of want to do with one. If I don't know if any of you remember this mod that I did a while back, but I had a replica of the shotgun axe from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Ooh,
and
nice.
It was a pump action Kronos, like Captain Xavier did. And obviously this was early on in my modding career, so this was not the greatest mod, and I'd love to redo it, but this time with a Firefly, because that would actually, you know, work like way better.
All right, well, Monkey Mods, give Jolt a call and get the the end strike color variation of the
Firefly. Yeah, Monkey Mods, that's if you're right. Listening, I could use one of them yellow ones.
Brad, what other kind of I got to ask one of the questions that the kids are going to want me to ask. What other gimmicky blasters have really captured your imagination? Either like recent releases or just sort of like all time, because I know that, you know, I always think about the ones from my childhood, but at that time everything felt gimmicky, right?
Sure.
What's other stuff that you've really loved, captured your imagination?
That's the thing. This question kind of even could go a little bit deeper and ask, like, you know, what's my philosophy as a as like a Nerf enthusiast a little bit, because some people really, really try hard and they have, you know, kitted out hair that shoots 300. I mean, I am one of those people too, but like my main play style is just aimed at having fun more than anything. I didn't have just as fun with a stock blaster, you know, provided everyone else did, but yeah. Like, is it fun to use? That's why I like the Firefly. That's why I like shells. I like the Winchester because it's lever action and has shells. That's fantastic. But I think anybody that's been in one of those recent live streams, which I'm loving doing, by the way, so there'll be much more of those. But anyone ask what's your favorite blaster, I always go back to the Slingfire. It's a dumpster in terms of performance. It's so bad, but just to be able to, you know, go to like a little nephew's birthday party and just light them up doing like Terminator flip cocking and walking around looking cool with a garbage blaster. That's a lot of fun. So I like the Slingfire. I like, you know, the Double Crusher for the Mega XL just for the sheer ridiculousness of the ammo. Maybe it's not gimmicky, but it's certainly off in terms of ammo. I really like Vortex quite a bit.
Oh, Vortex is so fun.
We are big Vortex lovers here.
Best single shot.
I just never had much access to Vortex, but I do remember the times I've used it, I really liked it. I did like the Slingfire quite a bit. That was the other blaster. If I wasn't using the Rampage, I was using a Slingfire.
Nice.
We used to have wars where we do cowboys versus aliens, so we did Alien Menace versus Zombie Strike stuff. It was super fun.
That's fun.
For lever action, though, sorry, guys, you can't beat the Roblox Bees blaster.
Ugh.
Yeah, I have feelings about that too, but we don't need to.
It's
that's a
perfect for awfuls rounds because it's undeniably terrible.
Because it is awful. You know, I think that's a really that's the philosophy that really sets our hobby apart from airsoft and from paintball. I think is that it's like you really have the like competitiveness and like goofiness and like you have these different stats and you can actually choose the balance between them, you know, as opposed to just sort of like there's one way to do it. Like in gel, if you're not running full auto, you're probably
what's the point
really playing.
Yep, exactly.
And, you know, and like airsoft is entirely tactical and competitive most of the time.
Yeah, and a lot of full auto as well. Unless you're role playing as a sniper, then you'll.
But Nerf can go doing foam can go so many different directions.
Yeah,
and I definitely align more with you on the
see,
fun scale.
I used to
most of the time.
I'll say that I joined the hobby with the wrong mindset, but to me, I didn't. The hobby was a lot more nebulous in what it meant to my understanding at the time, but as I've been in it longer, my opinions have since changed. I did join kind of as what people now call mill simps or whatever. It wasn't really a thing back then because this was like 2015. Every YouTuber had made a black blaster that looked like a realistic one at one point.
Well, and the hobby is changing so much, and there's been sort of this changing of the guard.
Yeah.
Plus, the way
the hobby
like
was
Coop.
Pitched to me by the person who invited me into the hobby told me it's like playing Call of Duty in real life. So that was my understanding of the hobby when I joined it.
Yeah.
I was also really into airsoft at the time, and now I'm much, much different about how I like to keep appearances of blasters I own and how I like
airsoft,
play
bro?
And do stuff.
You want to play airsoft, bro?
Oh, my God. Well, so with people like Coop kind of leaving the hobby and Nerf Taiwan.
No, I'm kidding.
This is Coop denial.
Who 772? What do you think about? How do you feel about the state of and sort of the future of and maybe your place in the content creation side of the hobby? Because it was something that we have to remind ourselves sometimes is it's like the hobby is not, we as YouTubers are not the hobby, right? We were talking too about how, you know, the reviews that get put out do have an impact on the companies. Like we have sort of an outsized impact on purchase decisions and on, even manufacturing decisions sometimes, but we're not necessarily like the mass of the hobby. Anyway, how do you see sort of the place going forward of content creation, and like how do you see sort of like the changes in the hobby changing what you do?
That's really interesting as a question, because like I've been thinking about that a lot this year, and I'm not sure that I have earth-shattering answers like for you or for myself for that matter, but like it's a very different perspective to think of, you know, the Nerf internet community is like the majority of people who would say that they enjoy foam flinging, right? Right. Whether it's YouTube, whether it's, you know, Reddit or something like that, a lot of people, they just sort of think like, oh, well, Hasbro should listen to us. I'm like, who are we? Like, it's just a small percentage of the people that buy their products, but it's nice to have that influence, like you said, but it's also kind of, for me
personally...
I'm sure
the Roblox Blasters will outsell the Strife X by way lots.
Absolutely. That's the thing, because it's like, I could say that, you know, the Ultra Series is not great, and that's largely true, even though I do like my speed and the 10 mags I bought for it, but, you
that
know,
that is the one I wouldn't let myself
it'll
buy.
It'll still sell. Yeah.
I'm already I'm too invested in the regular mags. I've got, like, I've got as many regular mags as you have speed mags, and then some.
Yeah. Last year, the speed was on a lot of YouTubers, like, do not buy Christmas lists. I actually put it on my recommendation list specifically because if you walk into a Walmart, it is the fastest shooting thing that's ever been available on the Walmart, other than, like, if that actually shoots, like, darts out of a magazine as opposed to, like, the MagStrike or something where, like, you have control over it. If you want to have that experience of, like, rapid fire, you have to build something custom for like hundreds of dollars and probably put a lipo in it. This is like the only way really to do that, like off the shelf.
Yeah, it's a dark hose that you don't have to put hours of electronics into.
I spent a lot of time at a Nerf arena locally last year, and the thing I picked up on was that a lot of people kind of missed the point of Ultra because there aren't many blasters you can get off the shelves, albeit aside from the pro blasters, that do what they do. The Ultra Blasters, they don't necessarily hit hobby levels, but they hit hotter than your stock Nerf stuff. And the other interesting thing is, after they got their issues fixed with the ammo type having durability issues, I saw a lot of parents bringing them in and saying they loved them for their kids because they only had to buy, sure, the ammo was a bit more expensive, but they only had to buy a couple packs, and those things seem to live forever.
They do.
It could just use them over and over and over and over again, unlike the
I can tell you right now,
up after a while,
it's true. I have so many AccuStrike Ultra Darts. I fire those things out of my long-barreled springers at like way harder than they're meant to be used at. Those things survive. I've had like two decapitations, two out of like 100 darts. Like, these things are beasts.
I've had my one decapitated dart that I've been playing with on my desk for a long time.
That's absolutely true. And I think that, like, the state of the Ultra line is largely to do with, like, a marketing failure, more so than the product
itself. It was the Ultra one, they're promising the world and not delivering.
If they didn't make some of the promises they made, then people would have been a lot lighter on them, I think.
Yeah, like if they had just marketed this as like a regular series and they had brought this out in 2009, you better believe people would have went ballistic in love.
Yeah.
Okay, so well, hold on though, because we've gone way off off course here. You know, thinking about, I mean, because like you look at a line like Ultra and you wonder if the Ultra One hadn't been so, like, what is the thing that actually made the Ultra One not really sell well? Because you put that blaster out on shelves and a lot of people will just sort of play with it and never really care that it's super bad, and that's just sort of their experience of Ultra. But how many videos were out on YouTube and how many views did those have talking about how bad the Ultra One was?
Drac how much of an Coop impact dunking on it for hours on
how,
end.
How much of an impact did that have? And multiply that effect over the thing. So that's kind of the stuff that I've been thinking about a lot is what kind of effect we have on those purchase decisions, and then how that effect loops around in the companies when they're making decisions later on down the road.
Sure. And then just to expand a little bit too on the question as I remember it anyway, like the changing state of the hobby, Coop, kind of stepping down to pursue his own personal interests, which, you know, my opinion on that is I'm very, very happy for him that, you know, because you can only do this for so long without, you know, dying inside if you don't actively enjoy it anymore. Even if you're making money, not worth it. So I'm really happy for him and I hope he's doing well. But, you know, the YouTube scape is changing a little bit, and people said, oh, you know, just the next biggest person's going to step up and fill the void, but that's not really true, you know, because I think that reviews have their place for sure, but, you know, one of the where I fall short sometimes is like, oh, yeah, it's another review. It's another review. It's another review. That's why I'm starting to do the live streaming to try to be a bit more interactive, because I think that's what people generally want. So, like, as far as I go, anyway, I'm trying to do something to have a bit more of a relationship with the audience to try to make the channel a bit more interactive. And, you know, maybe I'm just discovering that way too late and everybody already knew that. But it's been interesting because I'm going to do that and make some other kinds of content, you know, just something interesting. I'm going to dip my toe into podcasting here soon, but not about Nerf. That is not about Nerf. More about like a science education kind of thing, but that's cool. You know, just kind of branch out and kind of keep myself fresh too, because I can only do so many stock Hasbro blasters before I want to pull my own hair out too.
Absolutely. I know me and Vile came to the same conclusion. It was a bit quicker than you, but it was definitely the same conclusion. I fell into a trap of about a, I want to say 2021, I started doing more reviews. Ironically enough, the inspiration for some of the formatting and at least my thumbnails at the time, most of the videos are gone now, but your thumbnails were actually what I pulled inspiration from at the time. So I'd like take a photo and I used fonting in a similar way and other stuff. And then I went with it. I was enjoying it, but then eventually it just became another stock blaster review.
Yeah.
And then I had to remind myself, I started this channel as Grimm's Nerf Works, not Grimm's Review Works. And so,
well, and like with the number of those blasters that come through our door doing the new show, at a certain point, like you see a picture of it and you know what it is. It's just this, it like, you know exactly what it is. You can generally predict like, okay, it's effectively going to be a reskin of this sort of thing. We knew for a while that like Nerf had these like slam fire mechanisms that were like half working. We could just like predict which blasters they were going to be in. It was just getting old, and it still is old. Thankfully, some of the companies are doing stuff that's like somewhat innovative, but yeah, I don't know. We were talking also recently about how, you know, YouTube short form content is really changing the landscape a lot. There's a whole bunch of creators doing stuff on TikTok that are not on YouTube at all in this space. And what they're doing is completely different than the sort of YouTube sphere that we in the hobby are used to. And on YouTube, you can see that creators who are leaning into doing shorts, the kind of engagement that they're getting is different in general. Because we were debating whether to do like shorts versions of some of the stories to try to build audience. But we're still kind of on the fence about it because there's also a question of quality of audience, and like a show like ours is very much intended to talk inwardly to the hobby, and sort of spread news to
another
a specific
thing to think
group
about
of people.
Is sometimes the content is also what matters, because the first thing that I really saw shorts really taking off in the hobby was not really even in the hobby. It was those stupid reload videos that would get 9 bazillion views.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't think news is going to get the same kind of views that is going to get.
That is true, but also I would feel better about the product of doing short versions of news stories than I would feel about making reload videos.
Yeah, the thing I just noted when we were talking about it too is it was just kind of, I see a lot of the comments on those things, and a lot of the times, I mean, it's fine if they're new people who don't know about
this
stuff.
Well, that's the thing, is it's reaching...
But...
Like the low quality comments actually means that you're reaching more people, which is like one of the worst. I don't know if you experienced this, Brad, where like a video really takes off and you and like it just means that the comment section is a garbage heap.
The comment section is just the lowest.
Yeah, the amount IQ of like ones on I see where they really hit the algorithm with shorts, and it's just like, why don't you play with real guns? Just play airsoft, right. That airsoft, I haven't bro. Seen that, since like 2006.
That's when you know your video has made it.
For sure. I think I've been pretty blessed, if we want to use that word, about the comment sections on most of my videos. Yeah. I'm fairly like non-controversial, but you do get the occasional, why don't you just play airsoft? Why don't you, this man's got like all these, I don't know why I'm doing a Southern accent now. That's not nice.
I get it.
But it's like, this man's got like a wall full of toys behind him. Why can't he just like get some real guns? And I'm like, I really want to break down, because I do own a few firearms, you know, and we're responsible with them and that sort of thing. But like, I kind of want to just kind of lay into this person with all these kind of like stats on that sort of stuff. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that here.
Well, and just like what, like I play games with these.
Exactly.
I can't do that. Like that, it's a different.
You play a game with a real firearm, and you go to this really fun place called jail.
Yeah, that's a fun prize there. but the comment sections largely are very positive, and when you do the short form content, it is nice for growth, and I've found that somewhat to be true. But the thing with me is that I'm more willing to kind of throw a lot of stuff against the wall and see what sticks. I'm trying to do a little bit more of that these days, because I was kind of against shorts. But it's also, I also don't care, because it's not my day job. And so I'm not, like, if my YouTube ad rev, which is crap, by the way, it's so, it's nothing. I'll tell you after the chat, like, what that is, because it's so little. Don't do YouTube to make money. It's not worth it. But, like, I don't care if it drops by like 20% this next quarter. It doesn't pay my mortgage. So I'll be more willing to invest in shorts, because they're frankly more fun to make, because I can make myself a 60-second script and then, you know, do some nice voiceover and some tight editing. I'm like, oh, that took me half an hour and it was fun. And I don't want to, you know.
Yeah, I was actually doing TikTok. I was doing TikTok for a minute, and honestly, in retrospect, it was pretty fun. I did it for like a spat, and my channel did pretty well. Have you ever considered doing other platforms like that?
That's what's funny, because I do have a TikTok, so it's apparently not too successful.
Oh. Wait, no, maybe I know that. Maybe I know that.
I have not looked at TikTok in months.
Don't worry about it. You don't need to.
I uninstalled the app. I tried TikTok for a bit. I tried like a couple of shorts that I just would upload both to YouTube and TikTok. They did okay, and I just stopped.
Well, yeah, short form content is a whole other adventure. I've enjoyed yours. I think that you're doing a good job of it. So, like, yeah, do what makes you happy, man. Do whatever feels better to make. Sometimes it's like, well, am I going to talk about this stock Nerf blaster for 10 minutes, or am I going to talk about it for 1 minute? You know?
Talk about it for a moment. It's a Jolt reskin. Boom, short, done.
That's all you need. Especially when you know most of your audience already knows that, like you brought it before. Like, oh, this is another Hasbro Blaster, 70 FPS, semi-automatic.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, okay. We should move forward, but it was great getting some insight, despite our many tangents during that conversation.
But the tangents are the best part.
That's my favorite thing about any podcast. It's the tangents.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of tangents, who wants to talk about Bionicle? Just kidding.
Maybe next time. Right now, though, it's time for us to play What's That Blaster, which is our game we play every episode, where one member of the team picks an official Nerf blaster and reads a slightly modified version of the description, and everybody attempts to guess what it is. If you can guess it right away, you get 4 points. If you need to use a lifeline, for each lifeline you use, you lose 1 point. And those lifelines are the original stock capacity of the blaster, the original retail price, and the release year of that blaster. This week, it is Jolt's turn to pick. Last week, we had a selection that accidentally was a double. Which, it's really funny that it was the Maverick, of all things, that got picked twice. But we're basically just going to wipe that week off the thing, and we're going to move forward with a score. Right now, I'm losing at 22. Vile has 33. Jolt has 23. Jolt has 33. Grimms has 28. Not Enough Nerf is the only guest on the board. Nate and Dart Sweep technically got it, but
you know, let's give them
Schrodinger. Schrodinger's on the board. It's both.
Yeah,
not
Schrodinger.
Let's be fair to Dart. Let's be square to Dart Sweep and the other guy. My brain's dead today. Let's give them their
right,
points.
Not Enough. Dart Sweep and Nate are on the board. I'm just gonna say guests are on or not on the board. I'm not gonna worry about it too much here, okay, since they get one chance every year or whatever, depending on how often we have people back. But anyway, it's Jolt's turn. So, Jolt,
I got one for you.
Hit us.
Experience intense head-to-head competition with the ultimate precision and power of the series name, Blaster Name, Blaster. Choose a blaster color and go into battle as the red team or the blue team. The Blaster Name, Blaster, okay, has a spring-action cocking mechanism and fires at a velocity up to 100 FPS, 30 meters per second. It comes with an easy-load magazine and blank ammo type. The blaster has a trigger lock, a tactical rail, and a ready indicator. Experience the intensity of series name with blaster name. Blaster.
Okay, so it's rival, and it's magazine fed. And it's relatively early rival because it's got the two colors. Right?
Yeah, he said red or blue, so
Zeus.
Early mag fed rival.
I'm already on the Zeus.
It's...
No, it says cocking mechanism. That would be the Apollo.
No, it's a Springer. It's a
Springer.
There's other options there too,
For a second, I was thinking early dart tag because some of those came in red and blue. But the only one I can imagine that had a magazine was the Magstrike, and that's air powered, not spring powered.
Dart tag also had four colors.
Excuse me, the Magstrike had a clip. I'd have to correct you there.
No. We're not having that conversation on this podcast.
Yes, we are. We are now.
If it's early, because stop early on it was Flywheeler would have been Zeus, Springer would have been Apollo, and when you got onto the
the red and blue Helios that later came out, remember? There was also the Hypnos, and then there was the what was the other shotgun one?
Atlas.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
So okay, this is going to come down to maybe mag capacity, because I think some of those were 7 and some of those were 12.
Do we know which ones are which?
Yeah. Apollo was 7.
Apollo
and I think,
was 7.
I think
Atlas
the rest
was
of them 12, were all 12.
And so was the Hypnos was 12. And then
Helios was 12.
The Helios was 7.
Was it?
I had one. Yeah, I had one.
Okay,
there were 7.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so capacity could narrow it down, but
would
it'll not,
still be a 50-50.
It'll still be a 50-50.
Could you read it again, Jolt?
Sure.
Wait, before Jolt reads it again, do we know what year Rival initially was released?
15, I think?
Yeah, it was 15 or 16, somewhere okay. in there. I remember that very well.
Well, so theoretically, between those two lifelines, we should be able to guarantee it, right? Because we're talking about the very beginning ones.
Yeah,
because
the Helios
wave
didn't come out until like 2017 or 18, somewhere in there.
Okay. Go
same
ahead and
with
read
the
it
Hypnos.
Again,
experience intense head-to-head competition with the ultimate precision and power of the series name, Blaster. Choose a battle color or blaster color and go into battle as the red team or the blue team. The blank blaster has a spring action cocking mechanism and fires at a velocity up to 100 FPS, 30 meters per second. It comes with an easy load magazine and capacity ammo type. The blaster has a trigger lock, a tactical rail, and a ready indicator. Experience the intensity of series name with the blank blaster.
Okay.
Do they all have the priming indicators on them?
I believe.
I know the Helios did.
Yeah,
same with
the priming
Apollo
indicator is one of those features that's really easy to just like overlook because it's just like a little orange thing that's here or it's not there, you know?
I mean, even the Kronos has a indicator on it.
Yeah, I think they all do, honestly. Okay, which I mean, the way that we're looking at it, retail price would also help though, right? if we know them, because like there's definitely a price difference between. I believe
is $30 or $25.
Yeah, because the Apollo
Atlas
was less than that, right?
Atlas must have been somewhere around there as well. And then I know, wasn't the Apollo like? No.
Apollo was cheap.
Apollo was cheap. It was maybe 25 or 20, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think it was $20 because it was really entry level. But the Atlas and the Hypnos, I think, were around like $40 to $50.
Yeah, that sounds a lot closer to what I remember.
I think we could probably narrow it down if there's only four of these and he doesn't have some fifth secret rival blaster hidden, which I suspect that he might. But
entirely
if it's
possible,
we could probably get it off a price.
Okay. Should we start with that?
This might be the first time we've used the price.
We don't use it often. It's definitely the lesser of the lifelines, generally speaking. But I think in this situation, it does make sense. Do you agree, Vile?
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty good assessment.
All right. Can you please give us the original retail price?
$24.99 United States dollars, or apparently $59.99 Singaporean dollars.
$25.
$25. So that's either the that sucks too because the
mags are the same.
The mags are the same on those blasters, so capacity wouldn't help us because Helios had a 7-rounder.
But are they from the same year?
Did they cost
the
same?
No, not the same year. I think they were a similar price. I can't remember if it was 30 or 25 was the Helios. It's been a long time since I've had
one. We're talking about the Helios and the what?
The Apollo.
And the Apollo was the original one, and then the Helios was a couple years
later.
Yeah,
so we could gauge it by year.
That would be a slam dunk answer if it's one of those two. I was hoping he would either say $20 or $30, because that would have been pretty easy to pick between the two. But it's right in the middle of my discomfort on that.
Yeah, we could, at the same time, we could risk it and get more points if we guess it right.
Ugh. I just want to sit back here and meditate for a minute on my foggy old man memory, but that's probably a failing strategy. Yikes. Well, the year would definitely do it for sure.
Okay, let's do that next then. Let's go ahead and get the year, please, Jolt.
The year, fall 2015.
Apollo.
All right, we know it. Yeah, it's Apollo. It's Apollo.
You are correct. It is the Apollo.
All right.
I can't believe I got you for that long. You better believe I was partying when you freaking asked for the retail price. Why did you do that? The year would have given it to you.
That's true. That's true. But I was thinking, I'm like, is it $20? Is it $30? And it was neither. I'm just like, right in the middle. Because the rival descriptors are so generic.
Yeah, that's why I picked
it. So apparently the original retail price for the Helios was $30, which was my first guess. Ooh. But I was like, I didn't know if it was $25 or $30. It had been so long.
And you were right on the Hypnos. It was $50. I bought it when it first came out.
Nice.
All right. Well, that was a good one. Cause again, I just went through and cataloged all of the, what's that blasters and all of the different blasters that Jolt holds at the beginning of all the episodes and, all of the mod spotlights. And now I wish I'd gone back and kept track of which lifelines were actually used in every episode. I don't think we've really used.
I can probably go back and do that if you want later.
Listen. If you wanna, I would be interested to see it. You just add it to this, put three columns in the spreadsheet and just mark them, you know?
Yeah, I could just put an X in which one was used and which ones weren't.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with 2 points, that puts American Foam on the board. Welcome to the score sheet. Brings me up to 24, Vile to 25, Grimms to 30, narrowing the gap with Jolt at 33.
Just be happy I didn't pick a freaking blowgun again. Be happy.
Yeah, no thanks.
There's some really obscure stuff, man, for sure.
Yeah, I'm always picking the obscure stuff because I'm a jerk.
This would get way more devious if we weren't restricted to just Hasbro product.
Oh, believe me, I would pick the most obscure Busby blaster you've never heard of.
Well, I considered that, but the thing is, Busby has a very different description style, and they don't consistently have descriptions, and so it would really break up the game, unfortunately.
I'm kind of a glutton for punishment here. Did you guys ever thinking about doing a special live stream game show version of this or something? Something ridiculous.
I'll be honest with you. It's hard to find good ones.
Some of the more obscure stuff
that we've tried. Jolt did Sharpfire Delta.
If we opened it up to Bobby Blasters from a certain period of time, you could probably do like a game show thing where you had like questions and trivia and stuff, and you could probably.
You could probably do is like a 20 question style thing.
Yeah, either Nerf questions Jeopardy. Or do like Jeopardy. Yeah, Jeopardy.
I would like Nerf Jeopardy, please.
That would be cool.
I would be interested in actually drafting one up and hosting one at some point. That would be fun. I'd be absolutely down for that.
We'll pencil that down. That could be a fun side production at some point. I would certainly consider doing. I mean, that sounds like a blast. But speaking of blasters that have Hammer Primes, the Hammer Prime blaster scene has changed quite a bit lately. The Hammer Shot, of course, is the classic sidearm Hammer Prime. We had, what was it, that weird Alpha Strike version of Alpha Strike. Wasn't it like six shots? It wasn't like a Hammer Strike. Anyway, Sweet Revenge, you know, that's been sort of like the jam for a really long time. Now we have the Max Outlaw, which is sort of intended to be sort of the pro-level version of that same kind of thing. I was really surprised to see AK Blaster Mod actually doing a new Hammer Shot kit in 2023. The only Hammer Shots that you can buy new, at least in the US, is the reprint ones that Amazon sells in the like Amazon exclusive skins. Is it worth upgrading a Hammer Shot in 2023?
I'm going to go out and I'm going to be controversial here, and I'm going to say it was never worth upgrading a Hammer Shot.
Ooh.
The Hammer Shot is crap.
Gutsy. All right, you can't just say that and not justify it.
The performance is usually crap, and the mods that people would do would often be like metal hammers, you know, make your weight heavier and therefore performance even worse for a heavier prime.
I'm going to argue against you with my rationale,
and unless you are Radioactive himself, you are not getting performance out of a Hammer Shot.
I'm gonna rationalize the fact that it makes, if you've ever played HVZ, it is a solid secondary, even if it's not modded. However, the stock hammer is not the greatest, so even if you just put a metal hammer on it, it makes it easier to prime. You might not be getting better performance, but it's easier to prime in a jiffy. So I'd say this nylon hammer still has a market for people that do stuff like that.
Well, and the new product
SFI used to do resin cast stuff. Those were also pretty good.
The new product is specifically a plastic version of the metal hammer to reduce the weight.
Yeah, exactly.
So it seems like they have finally caught up to that being an issue. But it just feels like,
though, is like
it's really late.
It is
on the metal hammer thing. Here's the thing, though. They already perform like pretty much crap, so unless you're putting a huge upgrade spring in there just to get it back up to stock performance, is it really worth it? Like,
yeah, it is. I mean, if you've ever played HVZ, the zombies are going to be less than 30 feet away from you at almost all times. The time you need a secondary is when your primary jams, so you quickly grab it from your holster and fire off a shot, and then you can just fan off a couple of shots. It's very practical as an HVZ.
Well, so
sidearm.
We also now have the, what was that, six shot, the
6SH.
That one I will say is a good blaster, even if you can't mod it.
Oh yeah, at least it's comfortable. I absolutely love the 6SH when I've used it. It's really fun. I've always preferred the Sweet Revenges in general, but the Hammer Prime secondaries are a very solid option for the HVZ scene.
Are you a Hammer Shot person, Brad?
You know, I did try the Orange Modworks metal kit, and I was excited to put it in, and I did, and I just never really quite lived up to the hype for me. You know, it was more of a fun gimmicky thing again. Fun to spin around while you're just kind of walking from objective to objective, not in combat. But I just don't find too much use for secondary. So when I do, I end up switching over to something like one of the Radioactive like cylinders for like a X shot Fury 4 or something like that. So I just kind of turned away from hammer action.
Totally, yeah. The Reflex 6 was kind of a big deal in that sort of range as well. If you
I like my inlining
with
Rival Fate as my actual like game secondary. Mm. That's yeah, the one I use for stuff.
I'm a big believer in the Dart Zone Pro Mark II, so
I don't have one. If I had my pick currently for a secondary, it would be a Mark 2.1 because I've used it and it's probably one of my favorite sidearms for like higher performance with how it functions.
And again, something like the Mark II or the Mark 2.1 for like an HVZ situation does have to be brought down a little bit.
Yeah,
often.
It doesn't make sense for stuff like that. Now, if I was going back to an HVZ again, it would be a hammer shot-esque blaster that I'd be taking as a secondary.
Well, and that's why so Radioactive has this new kit for the Outlaw, which gives you a lot of tuning options for the Outlaw. And I think it's really neat to see a kit like this that isn't just a linear, like, here's a heavier spring. Here is one spring spacer. Make your thing hit harder. This is like, all right, I've tested this in a bunch of different directions. Well, Vile, I know you do a lot of tuning like this where you're trying to get things to like very mm-hmm. specific numbers. And I feel like it's neat to see a kit that has sort of like all those options mapped out for you.
Yeah, I've noticed that like Radioactive is really big about just testing and testing and testing. This is why, you know, Jolt makes the joke of like, well, unless you're Radioactive. And it's like, yeah, but Radioactive really takes the time to do the research of these mods. Is this panning out? Is this worth it? Well, here's the numbers I was getting with this. Here's the numbers I was getting with that. With something like this, it's also great because maybe you want it to hit HVZ levels and you want it as a secondary and you want it to hit, you know, 110s or something like that. And you want a lighter prime on it and stuff. That's great. That's awesome. You know, but if you say you want to, I always pose this with people. Accessibility is a very big thing. And while some people, you know, you could say, oh, we'll just get a flywheeler. You say, you know, what if you only have the accessibility of one hand? Springers for somebody who has one hand or something like that, there's a few options out there, and maybe they prefer the hammer action of these things. And yeah. I will always give that as an option. You have to always understand that there is somebody who this is the best blaster they've ever used. And whether it's the Outlaw, whether it's the Hammer Shot or some other Hammer Shot variant, it's, you know, sometimes it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter if it's hitting 60 FPS. It doesn't matter if it's hitting 150 FPS. What matters is the person who's wielding it. And we've even seen that with somebody like Beret, who can, you know, almost win a game on a stock Maverick. It doesn't matter. Performance doesn't matter. It's the blaster and the person who's wielding it. And I think there's always going to be a place for a hammer primed blaster of any kind, whether it's a hammer shot variant from Nerf or if it's, you know, Dart Zone's thing. I love that Radioactive took the time to just do a lot of tuning, testing, and then just threw it all in a single kit and then gives you all that documentation. Like here's the combinations you can go with. These are numbers that I have found that are tried and true based on these combos. You should be within this range. And that's really nice because it's really not much. You know, the spring spacer is like, it was a 2.5 millimeter, 2.5 millimeter, and I think a 10 millimeter spacer. And then obviously showed all the numbers between each of the, all the combinations that could come out of all that. And it was really impressive because you have to just look at that, like how many thousands of rounds did you have to go through to get those numbers? It's incredible. To me, actually, that's dedication to your design and your craft.
Well, I agree with you very much on all that, Vile, but this is Adventure Force Thunderbolt Erasure. we can't leave our fallen ones behind.
That's true.
Something Pika stock?
Look, I'm tuning the files, right? It's it'll be available at some point in time. I don't know when.
Yes. Okay.
Also, just another opportunity to point out, I swear, no matter how many people tell me it's fine, I look at how people are priming the Outlaw and it looks so uncomfortable to me.
It does look weird. I don't have one and I haven't tried it, but it does look strange.
I would not run a blaster like the Outlaw as my primary because, yeah, it is a little bit weird to prime it. But like in the use case that I have for it, which is carrying it on my hip and it's primed and like I may need to put a few shots out on it back to back, I feel like it makes sense. I ordered a Radioactives kit and I'm probably going to be experimenting first with tuning it down. Because I love the idea of having it just hit a little bit softer and be a little bit easier.
I'm kind of weird. I haven't used one personally, but it feels... So I've ran as a primary dual McCree revolvers before and been fine. Mm. So I already throw practicality out the window, but I feel like these would be fun because they look like hand cannons straight out of Destiny. And I am a big Destiny player. I play the shit out of Destiny 2. So it's right up my alley in the aesthetics department, at least for competitive games.
Yeah.
I guess not competitive is the right word. Superstock would be the better word I guess to use there. Looks fun.
Yeah, they are. I think that they're fun.
Do have one. I have played with them in some wars, and it really is a workout. It's not like super difficult or anything, right? But like the prime on the Outlaw is pretty stiff. It's like those old little hand squeezy workout things that I don't know the name of, but
The little hand exercisers. I know what you're talking about.
They have a place, but it might not be my first choice, even though it is impressive for what it does.
Well, speaking of hand exercises and also speaking of things that Vile is purchasing, Ezekiel has released a new... Ezekiel comes up with, like, the coolest, kind of weirdest products.
Love.
Like the mag loader.
The mag loader was wild. And this is a magazine spring maker, which is a little, like, 3D... It's, like, 3D print and hardware, and it is specifically designed to bend wire stock into a magazine spring. And I know Vile has ordered one.
Wow, that was fast. You know,
here's the thing. I actually was one of the first people requesting that this was a thing. I actually requested it from Easy. I said, I were saying, hey, or would you release these
don't
files?
Would you explain to the people, Vile, why having a machine to bend your own magazine springs is a good idea?
So this goes into those of... there's a lot of people who are making this, and we see a couple of people trying out to make mags for Mega XL darts. There's some people who are trying to make some, like, half-mega mags I've seen recently. You know, there's still a bunch of people who make their own style of mags, and buying... mag springs can be a bit of a pain because, you know, if somebody like Out of Darts is sold out for a while for whatever reason, or you then have to order, you know, from somebody else in overseas and it takes forever to get to you. The way that this works is it's very quick. I looked into spring manufacturing years ago. I know I'm into a lot of weird crap, but this is just a very fast way, especially for prototyping. And again, for people who are doing their own 3D printed mags, having the ability to make custom made springs. And these are how Ezekiel actually made the springs for the Mythic drums. That's the springs that come with it actually were made using a very similar jig. The reason why it took a while.
Okay.
Yeah, this is how it was done. Ezekiel made his own. And there are three different variants to the Mythic. There's the 51, like 53 and 55 round. It's based on the neck of it, and it's for your blaster, like what you're running. Like I think the Woozy had like the longest one, so you had to make a extended. And again, that's why you had to have custom mags. You couldn't just order a certain spring and it just worked for all of them. You had to make varying lengths. So it was a way to do that. But Ezekiel also made two different tooling heads. One makes it for short darts and one makes it for long darts. Again, that makes it really awesome because those ones for the long darts could potentially work for a mag for megas, you know. And spring, you know, like you even mentioned it in the video, that, you know, springs getting worn out, what's available, and something like this is very simple, especially with the small, like say if you're running a small Etsy shop, this is fantastic for a mag that you've designed yourself. Now you could pump them, and you can pump them out really quick. I've been following along as this spring maker's been done, and even when the Mythic drum was being made, I was watching Ezekiel show how he was making his own custom springs, and that's when I was like, please tell me you're going to release these files. And it took him a while to get to this point because if anybody's ever ordered anything from Ezekiel, you'll know that he's very, very meticulous about his product. He did not want to release this until it was up to par on basically up to his standards. He didn't want to release it and it break or it wears out. So he was trying to figure out ways to make it to where it could withstand doing it. Because for him, obviously, just 3D printing a new jig and just bending up however many springs he needs for Mythic drums, that's no big deal. But if people are ordering it, he felt like there had to be a much higher quality to it, which I really appreciated that. So yeah, I'm excited to get it. I want to check it out and try it out myself because, you know, being able to kind of make your own, I mean, that's awesome. Cause I've looked into trying to get springs made. It can be really expensive unless you're ordering, you know, thousands of them. I even looked at one point to get a machine to make them. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't have six figures to throw down on a machine like that. So, you know, something that's a 3D printed kit for the stuff that we do is fantastic. And I love seeing it.
I love this kind of like super specialized tooling. Cause the only other real example I can think of is, Foam Blast sold the motor puller that was like a set of caps that you put on a clamp.
Yeah,
that you can then use to pull motors.
Well, it's like the perfect spacer
cages.
Or the fitting tool as well to push the flywheels on as well. Yep. They had both the puller and that.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know,
on,
yeah.
On the same note as Foam Blast as well, for the longest time, the only spring that people had access to work with, even for making their own magazines when they were making 3D printed ones, is they'd make it take the Foam Blast drum spring.
Yep.
Because there wasn't a more readily available one. Now we have a different size of magazine. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of posts I've seen online on forums where people are asking, how do find Nerf or worker mag replacements? Where find?
Actually, it's funny. In the video, I showed my example of a 3D printed magazine is the like Devil's Nerf Works, one that that was for the, I can't remember what the thing is called, the like 3D printed like pistol flywheel thing. Anyway.
Is that the Goblin?
Yes. That uses the drum spring. That uses the drum spring for the follower.
Did Thanalogs use drum springs? I can't remember.
I don't know. Does anybody else know?
No clue.
What used drum springs?
Did the Thanalons use those? Or did those use something else?
I think they did.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's cool that the existence of this product sort of opens up possibilities, I think, for creators. And it's also just nice to know that like you can thrift like a weird magazine, and even if it's all worn out, as long as the follower's in there, you could get it working again potentially.
That happened to me. So I have one of the Busby shell mags, and it has the follower, but the spring has actually it was gone. I got it at the Goodwill outlet, but I picked up the mag, so I was like, well, maybe I could find something that fits. If I can just make my own, hey, you know, easy.
Yeah.
Funny, on an off note,
easy.
Real fast. Easy. Off note, Easy actually went to the extent of taking an old 3D printer and actually has a CNC process for making the springs for him to make it faster.
Oh my God.
Yeah, went to a whole other ball field. I've been watching a lot of this. I think it's really fascinating, and I love seeing somebody go to that extent.
Also, that's I just intense. Checked, Jolt. It did use a Foam Blast drum magazine.
Huh. Gotcha.
That's funny. All right. To close out this show, I always like to ask a little fun little round robin question. We covered in this episode Pittsburgh Technical College HVZ's upcoming event, which is themed after Call of Duty Zombies. Grim talked about it as a throwback to the early 2000s. And the video was really cool because it had little snippets of like, oh, here's them using a crossbow in the game, tied in with video of using a Nerf crossbow, one of the arrow shooting zombie strike ones. And then they had built like a cardboard, what's the drink called?
Juggernog. They have a whole bunch of other ones. That's just one of the more notable ones, and it increases your strength or something, if I remember.
Well, but
right.
the thing that's great about it is they actually built a cardboard model of the the machine that you get it out of in game. And so they splice the video in between. And so the theming around this event looks really, really solid. And so what I want to ask all of y'all is, what video game would you love to see or theme your own event around? What do you think would be?
Oh, I already
really
have my answer for this one.
Do we want our does our guest want to go first before everyone jumps in, or do you want to
opinion first?
Do you want to wait it out?
Oh man,
you can think about it a little more
something.
If you want.
Okay, I got something. I don't know how well formed the idea is, but being a gigantic Star Wars nerd, I would probably go towards something like a some sort of like Battlefront-esque or Tales from the Bounty Hunters like themed HVZ, because you could do, you know, bounties. There's so many different like little things that you could do Star Wars related for an HVZ, like straight out of like a old Battlefront game or something like that.
I'll see your Battlefront and raise you Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga.
Classic quality game.
Well, how would you? Okay, here's my question though. I could totally see doing like a Star Wars themed like HVZ or something, but what is like there isn't really a zombie equivalent in Star Wars.
There might be.
there are like
on the new show.
I also remember the fan theory with Death Troopers is that they might be zombies or other shit for the longest time. So there's all sorts of like theories on how zombies could exist in the Star Wars universe.
Are we forgetting that episode of Clone Wars where there's like zombie Geonosians?
Oh yeah. That's true.
Well, also zombies could just be stormtroopers, and they could just be. It's not that they don't get to have blasters; they're just incapable of hitting you.
That fits. I was gonna say we could extend this another hour. There was that book Death Troopers, not the ones from like Rogue One, but there was like some plague on a deserted ghost ship Star Destroyer, but they were basically zombies. And then the new Ahsoka show streaming on Disney Plus. Is potentially dealing with some of those themes again, perhaps some little Night Sister magic, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe we'll see.
All right.
So, it could be interesting.
Good stuff. I'll accept it. Grim, you want to go?
All right. So my first, or rather, the tied pick would have been COD. Because when I joined the hobby, that was one of the things I was big into was COD Zombies. But my second choice, and probably technically the one that would take priority, is Halo, actually, because they also have their own mode called Halo Infection. But there are also a variety of game types.
Go ahead.
Whatever. That you could do. but yeah, Halo is one of my favorite franchises of all time. It's Halo 3 is my favorite game of all time. And I know that colleges down in Georgia used to have, back in the day, wars called Halo Wars. You even had like your own UNSC tag and all sorts of other stuff. Never got to attend one of those because I would have been really young, because this was like 08 or something like that, I think. But
I mean, I had that in mind literally just because the Flood are such a good archetype.
Exactly.
And would
the Flood
give you
perfect for that.
Really interesting different ways to deal with the zombie.
It would also just give me an excuse to mod my my Halo Assault Rifle.
Yeah.
Or my Needler. Or maybe both.
That Halo Assault Rifle, that looks like a good blaster, to be honest.
It is. It's a solid blaster. It fits me like a glove.
I have the Halo Boomco one.
I know Tony Dog, when he used to attend our local KC&C Wars, it's a couple hours away from me, but when I would attend, he had one that he had modded that was solenoid pusher powered, fully automatic, and had I think it had an ammo counter even.
Interesting.
Dang.
Sweet.
All right, well, now I have to come up with a new one, so Joel.
I already gave mine. Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga. That'd be pretty quality.
Oh, come on. All right, fine. File, you're up then.
The Forest. So, if you're not familiar, The Forest is you crash an airplane. Your airplane crashes, basically, in this kind of, like, island forest area. And it... The whole premise is you're trying to find your kid that was also on the plane with you, but the whole island is teeming with these like almost zombie cannibalistic type of like, it's crazy too. 'Cause some of them are like really horrific, amalgamations of like legs and arms and stuff. But the point of it was you actually have to like build your own camp. So you have a camp, you know, settlement spot where you try to go back to rest and eat and stuff like that. You have to actually find food. You have to find stuff. And a lot of times you have to go into the encampments of these, you know, crazy people or crazy cannibals, whatever they are. And you go into caves. So you're trying to find like information. You're actually getting rosters of the people that are on there. So the way I like about or the reason I would like that is because it's task oriented. You have a base command. You have a task of trying to find information, the itinerary of the people on that list. You have to find, you know, get clues to try to find where more of the wreckage could be. You have to find, you know, go in and delve into these caves or whatever. It's such a fun one that you could do on, you know, a large property or a large place or wherever, especially places that are wooden and stuff like that. It would be just a fun one. And I think that anybody who knows who's played that game, if you're listening, you'd be like, oh my God, the forest. Yeah, because it's such a creepy game to play, because a lot of times when you're in caves, you only have a lighter to be able to see. And then you have to try to like make your own torches and stuff, so you're limited on visibility. And it's like super creepy. I think it'd be a great one.
All right.
So I think there actually used to be a HVZ nearby that had something similar where they actually put like pre-made food products throughout the thing, and you would actually stay on campus and sleep in still in combat and other stuff. So you'd have to like find places to sleep. You'd also have to find your darts and everything. It was like a 4-day, 3-day event.
That sounds cool. I think I had Halo in mind. Halo's been taken, but going back to our conversation at the beginning of the episode about play styles and about trying to keep things fun, because you know, Call of Duty, Halo, relatively like tactical kind of games, which I still think they'd be really great theming, and there's a lot of fun to be had in Halo. Plants vs. Zombies. So Plants vs. Zombies is, you know, like the original, it has evolved so much, as there's a lot to draw from. There's a lot of silliness and ridiculousness and bright colors in that game. And the idea that there's, you know, there's already like the game itself has a lot of like themed zombies, and it opens up a lot of possibilities for different super zombie characters and for people to do cosplay. But it also opens up the possibility of like having a form of gameplay that evolves kind of like the franchise evolved, where there might actually be something that happens at, like the first missions, the plants, the humans have like a game type where they have to stay in one place, and the zombies are all coming at them from one direction slowly, and maybe there's someone who actually has to like make decisions about where they go, kind of like the original game mode.
So like turning it into like a tactical type of thing.
Yeah,
slightly.
But,
where it's
but
like
getting
a command style game placement
once you get through that part, you unlock movement and move into a different game type. Based on some of the later games, based on the Plants vs. Zombies Heroes and whatever the other one is.
Garden
Warfare, thank you. I know all these names because my kids play them.
Alternatively, I will raise you Fortnite. They did have a zombies mode.
Fair. I mean, Fortnite.
I will see this if only all players are forced to do cringy dances.
That, emote, I mean, after you get a tag.
That would be a great mission, is to go and like develop your dance, and then you have to take it into a combat. There's a lot there. I like that a lot, actually. Initially, I was like, it's so easy to react.
There are
to
so many different like challenges that they have each battle pass season that you could even draw inspiration from.
Yeah. I'm just saying we've all dealt with so many stock Fortnite nerf blasters at this point that it's easy to react to the mention of Fortnite and nerf together and think about just that. But you're right, there is so much like depth to just sort of the random stuff that has come up in that game. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it means if you're a cosplayer and you just have any cosplay of a character that has ever appeared in Fortnite, it's a perfect appreciate cosplay.
Exactly.
To bring
even
to
Star
PC.
Wars, Marvel, DC,
yep.
Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Yep. Cackle Next Door was doing a Fortnite sponsorship during the Dragon Ball thing. So she has all of the Dragon Ball characters unlocked in her Fortnite account.
It would be if I was to actually like dress up like my actual skin, that would be difficult because it's like this really cool, opulent, golden like Ice King skin that's like super cool that has like full gold armor and all sorts of shit.
It would be sick.
Ice King, why is it not Fire King? You want the red and black.
It's because it was a rare skin that you got at the end of the original Season 7 back in, like, 2018. You had to, outlast thousands upon thousands of players and then get to the end to also get the skin and then unlock all the phases. So it's basically just a bit of a flex is why I use it. And also, gold is very flashy, so it makes it harder for me when I'm playing the game because I'm a radiantly shining target.
Oh, fair enough. Well, sounds sick. There's listen, HVZ organizers out there, listen to this. Free reign. have at it. Let us know. Invite us, because I would love to attend any of those. But with that, it's time to wrap up this episode of the podcast. Like I said, last episode as the Provisional Nerf News Network podcast. Next up, it will be the Foam News Collective podcast. Thank you so much, Brad, for joining us for this one. It was great to get to chat with you about all this stuff. Would you please tell all the folks where they can find you?
Well, American Foam on YouTube, and I believe American Foam Nerf on Instagram primarily. I do have a TikTok that is just ignored. I think that's American Foam Nerf on there as well.
Sweet. We will, of course, have links to all that good stuff. Be sure to check out Brad's live streams on, is it consistently Wednesdays? Is that what you're doing?
It is a bit random. I think that's the name of the stream has been the totally random Q&A and retro game stream.
Yeah.
So it just sort of happens when I have free time at the moment, but we're looking to lock down a permanent day of the week to make it more regular to get a few more folks in there. So it's just kind of keep your eyes peeled for the moment, but there will be a regular day here soon.
So be sure to pop in the YouTube and hit the subscribe button. I guess hitting the bell really does help if you're trying to catch live streams, because you do actually want to get notifications about when they happen. And as always, you know, we all have YouTube channels. Vile streams on Twitch on Fridays and Saturdays. And if you're listening to this when it first came out, he probably just went live. So come check that out. twitch.tv/vile_mods.
Yeah, I'm modding something right now.
Yeah, and you can find all our stuff.
Wow, have you just been modding something while we're talking, or do you mean in the future time? I don't know.
Maybe both.
Wow, he's just been spacing out and like modding one of those secret projects of his.
Yeah, typical. Jolt, do you have anything that you need to say before we end the episode?
I'm eating hot glue. That is all.
Thanks. All right, good. We've covered all the important bases for this one. Thanks, y'all. Great chat. Have a great night, everybody.
Let's stop recording now.
We can stop recording now.